Welcome to Season 2, Episode 12 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we review The Player's Notebook. We discuss, is the RPG fan base bad for business? And finally, we get Frostbite from Hellfrost. Again, welcome to Season 2, Episode 12 of RPG Circus. My name is Jeff, and joining me as normal is Zach and Mark. And this is, well, our one-year anniversary for this podcast passed a few days ago, but effectively, this is our one-year anniversary podcast.
Yay!
We made it.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but we made it.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked at that myself. I was like, wow, is that right? That can't be right.
Doesn't seem like it, does it?
Well, you know, we... Including this episode, there is about 25 episodes.
Wow.
And that doesn't sound like a lot, but since we record only once every 2 weeks and we took some time off for holidays and stuff, that's not actually bad. That's about right.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, that's about 26 episodes. You know, that's 25 episodes. That's one short, you know.
Yeah.
But that's not too bad.
Mm-mm.
So I'm very happy about that. Hopefully... the listener base is you guys out there are also happy, because otherwise we wouldn't be doing this. Actually, I don't know about that. I think I'd still be doing it. I may be only talking to myself, but I think I'd still be doing it.
It'd be very therapeutic.
Yeah. Well, I know that if we just kept looking at the numbers and had absolutely no listeners, I probably wouldn't still be here. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, thank you very much for. We know you have a lot of podcasts to choose from, so. We do appreciate it.
There are some good ones out there, you know.
Great
I mean, fun. So I mean, we're happy that you're listening to us as well. I mean, I'm sure. I don't know what you know. I don't think anyone's ever done the statistics on that, but I'm sure if someone's listening to our podcast about RPGs, they're probably listening to at least one other, probably two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
We are also we're number 3 on iTunes.
Really.
Yes, if you type in RPG, we're number 3.
Oh, by keyword. Huh. Who's on top?
Yeah, who are the dirty bastards in front of us?
I know. It's the Happy Jacks.
All right.
Actually, they ended up eking up past us a little while ago, and then they still have the RPG Countdown above them. But it looks like they finally knocked the RPG Countdown now down.
Oh, cool. Good work for them.
Yeah.
Nice work.
So it's Happy Jacks, RPG Countdown, and then us for the word RPG?
Yes, if you just type in RPG and then look up under podcasts.
Well, that's kind of interesting. That's kind of cool.
And
it doesn't hurt to have RPG in the title of the podcast, I don't think.
No, not at all. It helps a bit.
We didn't go quite as avant-garde with it as we may have, so.
And then listeners who subscribed to us also subscribed to Happy Jacks, RPG Countdown, Kicked in the Dice Bags, Smiling Jack's Bar and Grill, which is a Savage Worlds one.
Really? I'll have to try to listen to that. I have to apologize to the listener base. I've been doing other things.
It's run by a couple of people who are actually in the company.
Well,
I think so too.
Well, that's very cool.
And then Newbie DM's little minicast.
Minicast. Well, that's very cool.
Atomic Array and Save or Die.
Okay. Is Save or Die kind of an old school podcast? Is that their thing?
I'm not sure. You know,
I don't know why. That's what grabs me when I hear Save or Die, something old school.
That's what I would think.
And we've gotten 16 ratings over on iTunes.
Yeah, well.
And they're all, from what it looks like, they're all 5 stars. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And for those of you who haven't actually rated us there, go ahead and rate us there. We don't care. 1 star, 4 stars, 5 stars. We're just happy that you have an opinion and you want to rate us.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Why don't we get into the news? Shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, the one thing that I'm kind of excited about, even though I don't have time to participate, is the Dice Food Lodging podcast is hosting something they're calling Adventure Week. where they're inviting people to go ahead and write and submit adventures in a 1 week time frame. Is that, did I get that right?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which is really kind of cool, and they actually have several different formats for it. There's like a group, a whole bunch of short adventures, a short adventure, and I think there's like a, almost like a tournament level one. Let me see. There is a long format, which is three sessions of play, 12 hours of play total, a one-shot, one-session story, 4 hours of play, and a Adventure Week contract, which is 3 one-hour stories on a theme. And it should take, it's going to take place, basically you have to write it, I guess, during the week of June 27th through July 3rd, that's 2010.
Yeah.
And they say for you for you Northeasterners, this is the week prior to DexCon, so DexCon is the week after that. And they're going to judge things on completeness, story, production values, and adherence to time allotted to format. So apparently, the idea is to get a whole, is for people to get together with other people to create these things, especially with the production values, the art, and yeah, the like, which is really a cool concept.
Like, it's like they said on their on the blog, it's in the vein of NaNoWriMo, which is the National Novel Writing Month that is in every November, and where you're supposed to write an entire novel in 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really similar to that, and I think it's awesome. I'm definitely going to give it a try.
Yeah, well, I'm not. I have too many other things to do.
Yeah,
but it's unfortunate, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, there is other news. I guess Living Glorantha, I think that's how you pronounce it. I've always pronounced it that way, Glorantha. And Living Traveler has been announced to start this upcoming weekend.
Yes. Very exciting stuff.
Which is...
Especially for us Traveler Grognards.
Just as long as I don't ever have to see a Traveler LARP, I think I'll be okay.
Are you kidding? A Traveler LARP would be awesome. You'd be sitting around for 1 week, you know. Like, so basically, I could just pretend like that in my day-to-day life.
Do you know? Yeah, actually, the funny thing is in one of the old journals to the Traveler's Aid Society.
JTAS, yeah.
Yeah, one of the old, I mean, this is the old days. They actually suggested that if you had nothing better to do and you couldn't find any players, to go ahead and... like almost run like a solo adventure in real time. So like if you were on a spaceship and you were had a jump for 1 week, you wouldn't do anything for 1 week.
Huh.
I'll have to find that article. That's just it was really bizarre. Which I have. I have it on one of the old copies somewhere. But so there you go. I think that's cool though. Another interesting thing is that Monkey House Games is going to be releasing Villains and Vigilantes 2.1 in PDF format on RPG Now. Mm-hmm. Which, for you superhero people, well, it's one of the... I'd call it one of the original super games that came out back in the day.
It's definitely a landmark game, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yep, definitely completely random power generation. That was one of the more unique aspects to the game. You know, it's like, huh? I have what superpowers? Okay. So
that's awesome.
You know, it is from the standpoint of, is you kind of get tired of saying, I want to be Wolverine. Let's just roll up a random power. Let's see what you get. Okay, let's go from there.
I could definitely see playing it as a one-shot, but an entire campaign of random powers, I'm not sure if I would be able to go for it.
Well, so not to get into a deeper discussion on this, but I think a lot of superhero RPGs, the problem is niche protection. You know, in a lot of the superhero teams, you have Superman on the same team as Booster Gold, you know, or someone who's definitely at a lower power level, but they still find ways to contribute. A lot of superhero games have trouble finding that balance.
Yeah,
how do I contribute here?
I agree. And
Aquaman being in the same team as any members of the Justice League.
Basically, yeah, Aquaman. You know, random. Oh, look, I'm talking to Sea Life. That's great. And you're invulnerable. That's okay. Well, that's
just for the listener's future reference, I will be having a topic that got preempted by this the topic I am doing this week, but I am going to be doing a topic on supers next show. Primarily speaking about, well, let's face it, camp. But we'll get into that next episode. Apparently, the media guests for Gen Con 2010 have been announced, and it is the cast of the Guild and, well, Will Wheaton.
My hero.
I was kind of surprised they, I don't want to say landed Will Wheaton, but you know what I mean? In a lot of ways, their celebs are not always...
Celebs?
Yeah, you know, and that's nothing against them. It's a game, Gen Con's gaming convention first and foremost, so I don't get too bent out of shape, but I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I mean, Will Wheaton definitely has his share of fans.
So. I'm surprised that the guys from Penny Arcade aren't showing up for something like that, because they've been pretty big in the RPG scene recently.
Yeah, I think maybe because they have the whole PAX thing going on, maybe it's a competitive, I don't know.
Didn't one of the guys from Penny Arcade do the covers of one of the...
Yeah, he did the player strategy guide, which just came out.
Yeah, I hate to tell him, for a D&D book, not impressed with that cover.
Yeah, his art I like for the comic... And for a few other things, I'm not sure. It just didn't quite fit in with the style of all the other books.
Yeah.
Well, I can't blame them, though, trying to do the tie-in and everything. You know, I get it.
My viewpoint is, yes, it was cool for him to do it, but, you know, first off, I'm not a big D&D 4th edition player, and if I had to judge D&D just by that cover, it would have been like, what are they going for here? But that was just me. So, well... For those of you who are listening to this and are at Origins, what the hell are you doing? Origin is actually ongoing as we record this. They're in actually day two of the Origins game fair. So if you're there, why are you listening to us? If you're not there and you're in that area, why the hell aren't you there? So it's kind of exciting. You know, it's actually, in many ways, I kind of think of Origins as the opening of the con season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's earlier conventions, but that's still kind of the big 1-2 punch in my mind is always Origins and then Gen Con. Right. A couple guys from my gaming group are at Origins this week, so
well, that's cool.
More power to them to make the trip. I also saw Game Science is a sponsor this year of Origins, which just makes me indescribably happy to see Game Science up and about and everything. And
I'm thinking I'm probably going to have to pick up some Game Science dice at Gen Con.
Oh, Mark, it's going to be an experience, especially if Colonel Lou makes it again this year. It's pretty much, it's a highlight.
Excellent.
Yeah, well, so let's see what else we got. Oh, our buddy James Radji. He actually has two things out. He has Weird Fantasy Roleplay and an adventure called Hammers of the God. Well, congratulations to him. So we're going to include links to his products in the show notes so you can go check that out. We should probably try to get him on again to talk about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Pimp
it
out.
Great.
Which reminds me, before our listeners, we do have the... I'm trying to currently work out the logistics of it, but we do have the winner of the Paizo RPG Superstar Contest wanting to be interviewed by us. So... Mm-hmm. We're trying to work that out. It's just that, well, he's basically in Australia, and we're not.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of,
that is a big stretch.
But and lastly, we have issue 9 of Fight On is actually available for purchase, and we will also include that in the show notes too.
I need to pick it up.
So, is there anything else we need to cover? Is there any other news that I forgot? I think that's about it.
Yeah. Good news week.
This is actually a better news week than most weeks. There's a lot of weeks I'm scrambling for news, and I'm like, what's out there? This week, it's like all this stuff just came to me. It's like, wow, this was an easy week to get news. All right, why don't we go ahead and get started? Well, we've all heard of the Game Master's Notebook. I mean, it's I think we've even talked about the Game Master's Notebook, or if not,
we did.
I was about to say, if not, I know we've all each probably blogged a little bit about it.
Oh yeah.
But what about the players? So this week, Mark wants to enlighten us about the Player's Notebook.
Yeah, this topic was brought to my attention by Yusuf from Stargazer's blog. And he was asking, what should a player have in their notebook? I think it was probably a few months ago about the GM's notebook. It was about, you know, different tables you can have in there and name generators, things like that. But what should a player have? And actually, I assembled players' notebooks for my players back when we ran my Forgotten Realms campaign. And in that one, what I did was I put together a little folder that had their character sheet in it after they had made their characters. It had a map of the Forgotten Realms as it stood after the spell plague and everything. I also had a little strip of paper in it that gave the reason why they were going. I naturally started the campaign in a bar, so I had why it was they went to the bar that night.
Cold, frosty one.
Exactly. basically incorporating some of their backstories and things like that. So they actually had a reason to be there and a reason why they would end up getting involved in the whole adventure. And each one of them was able to read that separately. So they weren't, I wasn't just sitting there telling each person around the table why they were there. They knew to begin with. And the other players didn't necessarily know. And some of them had sort of secret backgrounds. So that actually, I thought, worked really well. The players really liked it. It even had a little crib sheet for how combat works, just so that they could they'd all played before, but mm-hmm. just so that they could have a little refresher. So I think those are all really good things you could have in somebody's player's book. But other things are, if you're playing 4th edition, you can have power cards. They've got those little clear sheets that have the little spots for you to slip cards into for like magic and things like that. And if you had a little notebook, you could actually put all your power cards in there and have them there waiting for you. So you could
reference.
You wouldn't even have to pull them out. Exactly, you could reference them. You wouldn't even have to pull them out of the book.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've had players, or I've done as a player with, like, especially mm-hmm. at the earlier levels with spells.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Especially with like Pathfinder, or of course, mm-hmm. you know, old D&D 3.5 with the SRD. You know, I'm able to cut and paste the spells that I have.
Yeah,
and especially for new players, when I've done that for new players, that's really been helpful to them, because then it's like they don't have to be. They're not trying to flip through the player's handbook, trying to look at the spell list, figure out what they're doing.
The cool thing is, then they have their own little customized spell book in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, you can, if you put your character sheet in there, put it in one of those little clear plastic sleeves, and then use a wet erase marker
to
mark
good.
Your hit points. Because yeah. if you mark your hit points, then you don't even have to mess with your character sheet. And I know a lot of people, they spend a lot of time making sure their character sheet is just right.
Yeah. People should just remember, do not get the cheap ones. There's the really thin ones, and then there's the thicker yeah. ones. Buy the
get
thicker
the nice
ones.
Thick ones. They're worth the money.
Yeah.
My wife actually ended up wearing a hole through her character sheets under the gold section from constantly changing the amount of gold that she had with the eraser. So that could have easily been fixed with a little wet erase. And what you could even do is mark your hit points and everything on the form, and then at the end of the night, put it actually onto your character sheet. Have you guys used lots of... used any players' things when you've been
calculator?
Well,
believe it or not,
I always like to have a map on hand. I sketch a lot of yeah. maps just to keep things in my head. I like to do relationship maps too if I'm like in an intrigue game.
Yeah.
You know, sort of just kind of plot out different. You know, okay, well the guardsman knows the princess, so.
Oh,
I'm kind of a geek for that sort of thing. So
oh, trust me, you should have seen my notes for. What is that? The Desert of Desolation series.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's the one where there's like you're in the Arabian, you're dealing mm-hmm. with like a whole bunch of nomads, like their thing, and just trying to figure out all the political intrigue there my notes for that were just really like crazy. I think my notes would have given like, you know, some, you know, police investigators a run for their money. So yeah, definitely paper, you know, for, I mean, it sounds weird. It's like, oh, paper, that makes sense. I already have paper, don't I? So you'd be surprised how many players I meet just forget to bring like just blank paper.
Yeah. When I was playing in one of my buddy's games, we were playing 3.5 before 4th edition even came out, and I was running a tiefling cleric who was a cleric of Pelor, and he was trying to redeem himself and everything. And I actually created a character sheet in a Moleskine notebook. And so then I had the entire notebook to fill with all different information about him. And I wrote down all of the spells, every single piece of the spell in there to reference through that. And then I had a secondary notebook that I used that was gridded. And I would draw up all the maps of every single location we ended up in just to keep myself occupied while we were playing. So you can do that too.
Was the game that boring?
We were actually playing Return to the Temple of Elemental Evil. Okay. And everybody, you know, says it's just a big, huge dungeon crawl, but we spent about 3 sessions just in the village of Homlet without ever getting past the first 3 pages of the adventure, because we were just exploring the city and talking to NPCs and developing relationships and stuff. And it took him a bit of effort to actually get us to the Moat House to even begin the adventure. So, yeah, we were pretty heavy role players and not really big on any type of combat. So anybody who says that the pre-made adventures don't have any role-playing in them, you just need to find the right people.
Well, that's it. But, and let's not forget the right game master.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
They have, for 3-ring binders, you can usually find their little cases where that you can put things into. Usually they're meant for pencils and things like that. But you could fit a set of dice in there along with some pencils and even possibly a miniature, and you'd basically have everything you would need inside of that notebook. Now, to be able to get one of those things, to be able to fit inside of that binder, you'd probably want a thicker one, like one that's 2 or 3 inches.
I have to recommend the not the circular rings, but they have the D-ring binders.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So those are all things I definitely think could go in there and be useful. I've always, for my players, I've always held on to everybody's character sheets, just because it makes it a lot more convenient than somebody showing up and being like, yeah, I forgot my character sheet.
Yeah, there's always that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
had the character sheet dug or buried underground, like, in the first week, you know, he comes in and it's all messy if he brings it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's such a discrepancy in what people feel like they need to have at the table, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that I've always kind of wanted to do is I've never wanted to really hold on to their character sheets, but I've always wanted to use my scanner just to scan their sheets so I have a digital copy somewhere in case they needed them.
I've done that before, but I didn't keep up with it.
Yeah, that's the major problem with any of that is, like, I don't like to keep up with any of that stuff. It's like, I have enough of my own stuff to keep up with.
Yeah.
I heard of a group that just keeps them updated on Google Docs, which is kind of neat.
That is a good idea.
Unfortunately, most of my players aren't that tech savvy.
Exactly. Now, you know, and we don't. Our game store's wireless is kind of iffy, which is where we play. So I don't think we've been connected in like a month now. So.
Well, that's why you're supposed to have Google Docs. You know, I thought, isn't there a version of Google Docs that you can take offline?
There is, but, you know.
Right at the end of our last 4th edition campaign, I got everybody's characters made in Character Builder. And with that, you got a printer, it's pretty easy to just, you know, print off a person's newest version of their character sheet.
Yeah. Well, I know one of the guys that I've gained with before, he never uses a printed character sheet. His character sheet is always on his laptop. He has no printed character sheet. So his laptop is his player's notebook.
Yeah.
You know, the only, and I, you know, don't get me wrong, and I think that is kind of a future step in gaming, you know, especially, I personally don't like, I'm not balls mad about the new iPad, but that kind of technology is going to affect tabletop gaming to a certain degree.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I can already, you know, tablets and those type of things, I can already see are eventually going to replace some, if not all, you know, of the books. I mean, I've always,
oh, yeah. If,
you know, I took one look at the Amazon Kindle, and that's what I thought. I said, you know, eventually, you know, that's it. It's like your books aren't going to be printed. You're going to have it on your Kindle or other e-reader device of your choice.
Yeah, I know that if I had one of those iPads, I would be putting all the books onto that, and then the dice. I'm not sure if I would necessarily use a dice roller.
No, I like the visceral feel. Of
exactly
rolling.
But any notes, I could draw up little maps using just like the simple paint programs, things like that. I think I would definitely end up using that.
I wonder how well that works.
Really, really heavily. I've messed with it a little bit. It actually it works as good as you drawing things with your fingers can work.
Well, I think that was my point. It's one of the things about not having a stylus.
Yeah,
you know, you really can't. You don't have the resolution you really want, the fine detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but of course, you know, if they had a stylus, people would just lose them anyway and be scratching up their screens exactly. with things that they shouldn't be using.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, is there anything else we got for the player's notebook before we move on?
I don't. Do you got anything, Zach?
No. But I'm definitely interested in hearing more. I'd always like to. Mm-hmm. More tips for next time I have one.
Yeah, actually,
yeah, if anybody wants to give us a call and let us know.
Yeah, what they have in their player's notebook, or what they think should be in their player's notebook. So, well, the next topic is one that just kind of cropped up the last few days. A gentleman by the name of Malcolm Shepard had an observation about the role-playing fan base, I guess is the best best way to put it. To be fair, he was talking about a very specific market when he was making these comments. He was talking about something called transmedia. Have you, either one of you ever heard of that term before?
I have not.
Well, what I've gotten the gist of, look it up on Wikipedia if you really want a full explanation of what it is. It's not. It's sort of like marketing tie-in, but not really. The example that they've always given was apparently the Matrix movies and then the Animatrix and some other Matrix, like, I don't know, comics books or something like that, where you don't need to have read any of the other, you know, watched the other material, read the other material, experienced the other material, but if you did, it enhances your understanding of some other section of it. So it's like,
okay.
To me, it's still marketing speak for, this is a media tie-in. And, you know, we just want you to buy all the media because that way, to me, that's what it is. To me, it's a marketing trick to get you to buy everything.
Well, Marvel Comics has done that for, you know, since they came out.
Well,
tying things together where you don't necessarily have to have read this one comic to know what's going on. But if you own all the comics, then you're going to have the full story.
Right. But this,
multiple entry points.
Right. But this is more along the lines of, you know, if it was in that case of Marvel Comics, it'd be like there'd be a TV show that would explain a little yeah. piece of it, and then there would be a movie that might explain another little piece of it, and you know yeah. there would be an audio podcast that might explain another piece of it or something bizarre like yeah. that, and then you know there might be an electronic game that if you play that it might explain some other little piece of it. That's what apparently that's what transmedia is all about. Again, to me, it's just, you know, I'm sorry, I don't care what the media people, marketing people say. To me, it's just marketing on steroids, you know,
yeah.
marketing tie-in on steroids. So his point, though, is that apparently, you know, role players tend to make a really bad market. You know, he was making some suggestions that for one of his clients, you know, he thought that, you know, role players should be the center of all things role-playing, which I... You know, I understand where he's coming from, where he's right. He is right that there are a lot of RPGers that, well, are cynical. I think we're cynical, and we relate to a lot of content cynically. You know, here was his major points. I'm just going to give them out. Instead of having social conversations, they focused on concrete goals. You know what? I actually agree with that. We tend to do that. That's because that's the way we game. Most of us, you know.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we don't have social contracts, but you know, we tend to, you know, there's always some sort of goals that we're trying to accomplish at the end of the day in a game for whatever reason. So yeah. They related to content in a cynical fashion. True. They dissuade other users from getting involved with the content. I can actually see that, unfortunately, but I think that happens in any type of fan base where you have extreme fans. Anytime there's anyone who claims I'm a true fan, you're in, you know that you might as well just put duct tape over their mouth and walk away.
Well, in the raging sense of self-entitlement that comes with it. Or, you know, of I deserve this, I deserve that, you know, you owe me this. I think that that would be frustrating to me.
This is the one that tells me, it's like, well, you know, I think that's just because the way most gamers are, we tend to not, we don't necessarily always buy things. They resisted most desired behaviors. That is, the stuff that actually might make money for obviously the client, you know, who is providing whatever service or trying to get the RPG players involved. And, you know, the only thing I can say about that is that most role players that I know are, tend to be, how do I put this? Non-sheep.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best way I can put it. Mm-hmm. We tend to think a lot more for ourselves. We tend to not necessarily want to do what everyone else is doing. So we tend to be a little bit, to be blunt, slightly outcasts. Especially those older gamers that, you know, that's when we grew up. You know, gaming was definitely something that was somewhat taboo. You know, you were a real outsider if you played RPGs. So, I mean, we kind of keep that up. I mean, you know, and heck. So, we resisted the most desired behaviors, you know, because, well, we don't want to do those things. We want to do other things. So, okay. And then finally, they complain all the time. I left out a word because, well, he was kind of mean about it. And that was one of the major complaints about his article. There is a link in our show notes to his article, is that he really started getting a little nasty in here, I think.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like I said, he's not entirely wrong. We do these things. But my favorite reply still is, there's a link to AnyWorld. There's a whole forum still going on. at last count, it's up to 21 pages.
Nice.
And it's where, you know, first off, you know, Eric Mona, we all know who he is, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Publisher of Paizo.
He apparently read the article, and his first comment was basically he's basically something to the effect is, our employees are probably glad that we didn't take this guy's advice. He used slightly different words. I'm paraphrasing him for those who want to go ahead and read it. And I'm paraphrasing it because then, you know, the editor staff kind of said, well, you know, you should be nicer to people. You know, so, okay, you know, no problem. And then, of course, you know, people went on and did other things. But my favorite part is he had a pretty interesting rebuttal to everything. You know, because he talked about how, you know, what I've talked about is, you know, you pick a fan, you know, there is a fan base out there for anything. It's like, I guess apparently, I did not know this until I read his thing, is I guess at one point he ran a sports collectible store or something like that. Sports memorabilia store at one point. And I'm like, and he was like, yeah, you know, in there you had customers who didn't bathe, who were rude or angry, all that other stuff. You know, I actually think that in some ways they're probably more nasty and vocal than some of the RPGers we deal with. You know? And, you know, he actually brought up the comment, of course, is that, yes, it's like, why do we as RPGers need to be, you know, role players, tabletop role players, which, you know, he admits is a small niche market. Why should we all of a sudden be the center of all things role playing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of agree with that. I think the problem that I had with the article is that, you know, I really hate to say it, unless you're making stuff specifically for RPGers, for like RPG game-related stuff for RPGers, I'm not sure you can really tap into the RPG market like you can other markets. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're so hopelessly fractured. You know, I don't see that there's uniform behavior there to be capitalized on. But yeah. I also don't really get into. I also don't think that this is anything new to any niche hobby, be it sports memorabilia collection or role-playing games or model railroading. I was interested in putting together a train set this last Christmas, and so I spent some time on some model railroading boards. And we have a thing or two to learn about Flame Wars. I'll just tell you that. we argue about 4th edition versus 3rd edition. They argue about O gauge versus Z gauge versus HO gauge versus which company. You put in the variables, and the smaller the hobby, the more angry the arguments are going to be over it. So,
and
I don't think it's a niche hobby that's pretty well fractured. I mean, there's a very thin thread in a lot of ways that connects the entire hobby. So I really don't think, kind of like Jeff said, you know, I don't see our little corner being prime recruiting ground for that.
Yeah, apparently I think that was the guy's, his client's big mistake, is he apparently recruited a lot of RPGers to come in and do stuff.
Yeah.
not a good idea.
I used to work at a game store. And
say it isn't so.
Gamers can be dicks.
Oh,
that's
sure.
What it comes down to. I mean, even the nicest guys, there's something that they don't like, and they can be horrible about it. I'm not saying all gamers are. I'm a gamer myself, but there's a lot of gamers out there who can be really horrible people. But go on to Xbox Live, and you're going to find the same number of people, even more so. When with their little voice chat and everything, who are also can be horrible people as well. So, I mean, that's a much larger community, and the pure anonymity of that. Like, you wouldn't want Xbox Live players to be the people you market to.
Right. I mean, it's kind of interesting. So, apparently. When I made a comment on Twitter that I kind of liked Eric Mona's reply, I also got a reply back that, well, I would have liked to see him take the high ground, and I was just like, well, I'm not sure what you mean. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't think there was a good way to respond to that outside of the fact that Eric Mona's reply, basic premise was, is that, you know what, I run my company, I sell games, and I deal with the customer base I have. So,
yeah,
and I think that's what I take away from all this. I think it's kind of it's an interesting thing to discuss, just from the fact that as fans, we sometimes, or as gamers, you know, we have to realize that, you know, sometimes our behavior is not nice, and suppose hopefully at some point maybe we might be a little nicer to one another. At least at gaming conventions, I think we tend to be a little nicer as a whole. You know, because we're there on vacation or whatever. Although, you know, no offense to the what are they called, the people that dress up as anime? What is that? The cosplay people. They get a little indignant. I noticed last time at Gen Con. With each other.
They are a strange subculture of Gen Con and just in general. So I don't know, there seem to be more and more of them every year, kind of.
Yeah, you know, and
kind of
invading.
And don't get me wrong, I found it really interesting that it's almost like they all expected the other people to speak Japanese too.
Mm-hmm.
I found that kind of interesting. Anyway, I digress.
Have you guys seen the hierarchy of geekdom?
Oh, yes.
It's a big, huge chart.
I think
yes,
so. It's been a
while. We printed it out at work. We're well-versed on that. But we're definitely above. I'm pretty sure we're above them, aren't we, Mark?
We are. Let me. I just brought it up.
I know we're above furries.
we're role playing gamers who are about the same level as Trekkies, fanfic writers. But we are, let's see. You know, this one doesn't have cosplayers. I'll have to find the bigger one. And we'll, I'll send it to you guys. We'll get it in the show notes.
I've seen the expanded one, but I know we're above LARPers and furries and erotic furries. So
yes,
I can pretty much live with my place in the universe, I guess, if that's the case. So
well, at least we're all above, you know.
Oh, there it is.
You found it, huh?
I did.
All right, hold on a sec. Three.
I found it. We are definitely above them because they don't actually have the cosplayers here, but we are less geeky than anime fans who use the term Japanimation. So I'll send this to you guys and we can put it in the show notes.
That's fantastic. We'll do that. Well, I mean, I think I'm talked out about this topic, unless you guys have anything else you want to add.
No, I don't think so.
The only reason I even bring it up is it just seemed like everyone started talking about it, and it's like, well, let me give my opinion on it. What the heck? So finally, Zach's up, and what do we have? You're going to talk about something that we talked a little bit about last episode.
That's right, Hellfrost, and this is actually a little review I'm doing of the Hellfrost setting, which is a really, really neat setting from Triple Ace Games. Those who aren't familiar with Triple Ace Games, they are a company that is very closely linked with Savage Worlds. They do a lot of, I guess you'd say, different kind of a little bit off the beaten path settings for Savage Worlds. And they have Sundered Skies, which is sort of a floating islands, dark fantasy airship, kind of a weird Alice in Wonderland one, some pulp action, which is much more in the vein of what people think of with Savage Worlds. But Hellfrost is their shot at doing fantasy for sort of an epic fantasy setting. Now, Hellfrost is designed for Savage Worlds, but it is also system generic. So if you heard Savage Worlds and tuned out, don't, because I know we have a lot of listeners who both play and don't play Savage Worlds, but Hellfrost is a setting that can be used. It's designed so that it can be used with a number of different systems, which is always nice. Before we get into the technical things, just to give you guys a little idea, the world's name is Rassilon. I hope I'm saying that correctly. It's Rassilon. And basically, it kind of has that, if anyone's a George R. Martin fan with the whole winter is coming and the north and the whites and the snow and everything, the winter sort of brings these, you know, evil giants, these demons, orcs, all these things. Basically, the climate of this world is sort of an eco-apocalypse, although not in the tree-hugger, greeny kind of sense. You know, it's not like, you know, someone had a giant oil spill and now the climate's all shabby. There's none of that, you know. It's a evil supernatural effect that happened. Basically, this giant sheet of ice called the Hellfrost has almost basically like a glacier has started to consume these northern lands. So there's a very short, if any, summer. It's chilly pretty much all the time. There are these killer winds that just swipe through. Some lands are completely frozen. Lands are in turmoil, but there's still this chance for epic fantasy. And both the, if you go to the Triple Ace Games website for Hellfrost, which are in the notes, they have a map of the setting. And this is one of the best, most evocative maps I have seen. I don't know about what it is, but it's up there for me with some of the old Forgotten Realms maps for you look at it and you say, man, I want to adventure in this place. It sort of has that going for it. There's a lot of different lands with different feels that you can adventure in. And behind it all is this theme of basically you have these supernatural big bads. And a lot of people aren't even sure why it's happening, but it kind of gives it a desperation feel, sort of a still epic, still a, seems like a decent power level, but you know, this is a region of the world that is slowly transforming, if not dying. And so it gives it sort of a, I don't want to say a time sensitive feel to it, but definitely a urgency to, okay, well, these things need done, these adventures need done, and winter's coming, winter's here, we need to do this before this land is completely overrun. So, Hellfrost, it's some pretty good writing. Now, one of the things I didn't care for is, you know, I'm one of those guys who likes everything in one book. Hellfrost does not do that. And they had kind of a delayed release schedule, which didn't, I think, kind of blunted the impact it had. Because what happened is we got a player's guide, which has a lot of the basic player information. If you were trying to run a fantasy campaign with Savage Worlds with this, the player's guide, which is the blue book, would be the first one you'd get. And that's got all your different edges and all the different, basically everything you'd need to run this with Savage Worlds. It's got the different races, it's got some gear, it's got a magic system that's kind of neat. There's sort of a siphoning effect. Magic has gone kind of wonky in this world too, which makes casting pretty exciting and pretty dangerous. And that's all covered in the Hellfrost Player's Guide. So if you are a Savage Worlds fan and are looking at getting into this, that's probably where you want to start after you look at the free previews and whatnot, of course, because you don't want to drop money where you don't have to. So now, if you're looking for a setting where you like the idea of sort of this winter-themed, dangerous feeling to it, a very epic fantasy looking kind of map and lots of stuff to do, lots of different lands, then you can jump right into the Hellfrost Gazetteer, which I believe was the second book released. And that goes into all the lands of Rassilon, and that is very much a system generic book. It's got a couple little things in there for Savage Worlds, but not really. It's been written, so you could use it with anything. I was kicking around using it with Margaret Weiss Publishing Productions' Cortex system and a number of other systems. So, but they also did a third book, which I have not reviewed in full disclosure, and that's The Bestiary. And that's got some of the special Hellfrost animals in it, and, from description, it's a pretty good it's got 40 archetypes of characters, over 300 monsters and potential opponents. So really, if you do want to do Hellfrost and you want everything, there is a little bit of an investment. That's the downside to it.
Well, the other thing too, they also let us know that they actually have a series of region guides that are in 12-page PDFs.
Yeah,
and yes, apparently those are about $3.99 a piece. And so far, they said they have 10, and they claim that they're releasing one about every week.
Yeah, there are also they have the Hellfrost Adventure series, which cover it goes a little bit into a region, but it's also an adventure. But the region guides, which I were coming to. There's actually a free product called Of Gods and Men. That's kind of the zero one. That's one of the free products I was talking about. But that kind of gives you an idea of the religion, some of the minor pantheons and whatnot. So really, if you just want a certain area or something, you don't have to go whole hog in. If you're a completist, then you'll probably want to. And I think Hellfrost is a cool enough setting that I think people would want to, but there is a little bit of an investment in there. The nice thing is that these are very, very nice books. They seem to be a really good quality, a nice hardback. You know, the art is average to very good, and it is full color.
And
very, very evocative. So Triple Ace Games makes a nice quality book. So if you're looking for something like that and you want something that really, to me, some settings just kind of tug you on the shirt sleeve and say, hey, want to adventure in here? The first edition Forgotten Realms did that for me. You know, that was a big one. Hellfrost is able to do that as well.
In other words, I kind of think I know what you're talking about, because I think some of the earlier settings were kind of like, it's a fantasy setting, and you're just like, eh, it's the same as mm-hmm. every other fantasy setting. This one, from what you're describing, is very different.
It is, but it's not so far that it's just weird for weirdness's sake.
Yeah,
right.
We've talked about that before, but...
Yeah, which is kind of my major issue with some of the race choices in 4th edition. I'm sorry. I know you you like the Tiefling, but it's just like, I have no place in any game world I've ever run for something like the Tiefling.
I had the when I ran my Tiefling, it was pre-4th edition, so they didn't all look the same, and basically my guy just looked like a human who had red skin and smelled like sulfur.
Well, you know, one of the things about the different races in Hellfrost is you do have like your frost dwarves and your hearth elves and some races that are definitely recognizable. You also have the Frostborn, who are sort of an anomaly, who are, to me, it'd almost be like playing Mr. Freeze, you know, the way you look at them. I know that's not actually how, but I mean, they're a product of this supernatural hellish cold. I mean, Frostborn didn't exist a century ago in this. And they have, you know, the blue-white skin, white hair, you know, very pale blue eyes. They're always cold. And, you know, that's something that's close enough that it's just not too weird, but at the same time, you know, it's something a little bit new. And and that's what I appreciate about that. So
that sounds cool. I unfortunately, my monetary amount won't allow me to probably investigate that anytime soon.
That's always the downer. For human races, it's kind of neat, because a lot of times we're used to races like, you know, there's the merry old England analog, and there might be the Holy Roman Empire analog, and some of these. The races in here, as you would expect from a somewhat northern climate, you know, these stout hardy races, they kind of have, they're kind of a Saxon analog or a Finn analog, which is really kind of neat, because you don't see that as much. I mean, it's not the same, but I mean, you have steads, you don't have just ye old medieval village. It's something that still has, you know, we can still relate to it without going too far. So I definitely recommend the Hellfrost Gazetteer if you are just looking for a new setting. Download the map, look at some of those free previews on the Triple Ace Hellfrost site. If you are a Savage Worlds player and you are just really wanting some fantasy that is different but not too different, then I would definitely look at the Player's Guide. If you really, and then just go from there. If you want the other book, fine. If not, you know, you're set. So that's it. Do you guys have any questions on it, or?
No, actually, that sounds really interesting. I may have to read up some more. I just can't afford anything right now.
And it's, you know, I always say that there's no excuse not to really check out a product before you buy. None of us are exactly flush with cash, especially not in this economy. And
I've been saving my penny so I can actually make it to Gen Con again this year.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, that'll be worth it, though.
Yeah, which, but, by the way, if my count is correct, is about 41 days away.
Yeah,
at the point.
My wife tried to tell me it was 2 months. I'm like, it's only a week. It's only a month and a week. She's like, no, it's 2 months. I said, no, it isn't.
No, I actually fly out in 40 days, and the convention is in 41.
Yeah, that's nice. Right.
So
my mom is actually flying halfway across the country to watch our son, so that me and my wife will be able to make it. So
well, that's very cool. Thanks, and you know, mom. What? We are all going to meet Michael from Stargazers.
Yeah.
World, which
is running a game.
Yeah. He's looking forward to that, by the way.
Yeah, he is.
So I'm excited. You know, for most of us, at least for me, I can't speak for you guys, but the thing I like about going to Gen Con is especially meeting, since we're all bloggers and podcasters, I like meeting the other bloggers and podcasters,
mm-hmm.
you know, the gaming podcasters that go to that. So
that's not something we get too many chances to do.
No,
so
I definitely plan on being at the media meet and greet. I don't know about you guys, but I definitely mm-hmm. plan on doing that. It was kind of interesting last year. I actually ended up introducing a few people because, well, I just happened to meet them and they wanted to meet other people and I just happened to met them too. I don't know how that works out.
Nice.
So it's very exciting. So yeah, if our listeners want to actually meet us there, they can. I don't know. I won't wear like some sort of weird identifying mark, but if you ask around, I'll be there. So
I'm going to cosplay.
Mark.
Yeah, I might even furry it up.
Furry cosplay.
I don't even think that would be allowed at Gen Con.
I have yet to see a furry at Gen Con, and I.
Well, you know, we came close.
We did see that weird dude in the top. Still, not to get back on that.
If that guy is there again this year, I have to shoot video of that. That was just too weird.
If that guy is there this year, I might have to just shoot him. That might be the only way I'll be able to sleep at night again.
At least you broke your curse.
That's true. That's true. At no point was I involved in a LARP inadvertently, so that was through the imbibing of alcohol, I was not put in a place where I was interfering with a LARP. So just saying, if you go into a hotel and there is a guy dressed up like he works at a hotel and he's talking with a guy complaining about a guest, how am I supposed to know that's not a LARP? You know, I mean, that is actually what happened. I came in there, I'm like, uh-oh. He was complaining to this guy, it sounds like one of the LARPers got a little carried away. And then he's like, I will consider what you say, Azrael. I'm like, man, how lame is that? You go all the way to Indianapolis to be in a Gen Con LARP, and you get the role of hotel vampire manager. Or vampire hotel manager, I'm not sure which. But I mean, off the elevator. That's what you... I don't get it.
And for those listeners that want to actually hear that entire story in its entirety, you've kind of given a brief overview. It's much funnier in the longer version.
Oh, it gets... Yeah, there's the Oregon Trail gets brought into it at one point. It was finally broken. Hopefully this year we'll continue my new streak. So.
All right. Well, and actually, to speak of a few other dates before we get into our close... We have July 9th is when the Any Award nominees will be announced. And then voting will begin. Oh, God. You know what? I've just killed myself. I forget when the voting begins. It's like a week or two after that. I remember. I think the 16th.
Yeah, it's what about like 2 weeks before Gen Con or something?
Yeah, it's so. And it uses their voting. The way their voting is done, it is done via... I want to say a parliamentary style is what it's called. You know what I'm talking about?
I forget the name of it.
I forget the name. What was that?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's very unique. When they tell you what type of style is, look up that in Wikipedia. It's a very interesting way to actually count the votes, if you will. It makes sense, but it's very interesting to count them that way. Huh. Well, with that, I think. Well, if you have any comments for anything we've said on this show, or just want to give us a shout and say hi, you can. There's several ways you can do that. You can, of course, email us. You can record a little audio comment on your computer and email it to us at info@rpgcircus.com. Or if you don't want to use your voice, you can just type it out. Or you can always leave us a voicemail. You can reach us at 1-888. I didn't say that. 1-888. Wow. 1-888-643-6322. That is 1-888-643-6322, and that will give you our voicemail number. Or if you want to use Skype, you can actually Skype us at RPG Circus, and that will give us a voicemail message. If you want to send us a comment on Twitter, we are found at RPG Circus. Is that crazy or what? So, I think that's about it. Do we have any other comments before we close?
No. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening for a full year.
Yeah, and hopefully
for sticking with us.
We plan on doing this for as long as we can. So, mm-hmm. And with that, we'll catch you guys next week, and hopefully, either I'm going to talk about comic books, or if I actually get the Paizo interview done before that, the Paizo winner, I'll do that one. Depending, we'll see.
Yeah.
2 weeks is a long way away, and we'll see how that pans out for us. So, mm-hmm. Everyone have a good time, and we'll catch you next time. The preceding podcast is released under a Creative Commons 3.0 Attribution US license. For more information, go to creativecommons.org.